everyone. Welcome back. We are here. Segment number two on the scoreboard. 844-STUDIO-4 is the phone number. If you got something you'd like to talk about, don't be shy. You can call me up. I don't bite. Well, maybe. I don't know. We'll see how I feel. We are in the middle of talking about high school baseball. Then we're going to get into high school women's soccer. So there's some good teams in the area. Unfortunately, the opposite is true for baseball. The high school baseball teams, they haven't been faring all that well this year. When looking at those NC rankings that we love so much, you got to scroll for a while before you find somebody pretty local. Now you're going to find Charlotte schools, and that's normal, but we're not in Charlotte. We're a little bit farther north of Charlotte. So the better teams, it looks like East Lincoln is the highest out there in Denver. It's a tough year for this area and for baseball. We talked about it a few weeks ago. I think it was South Iredell and Lake Norman were the only two schools in the top 100. I don't think either of them are in the top 100 anymore. We already talked about Lake Norman. They are definitely not in the top 100 anymore. Now for South Iredell High School, story is a little bit different. Yeah, they've been losing. They got some wins here and there, but they've dropped to 110th in the state of North Carolina with a chance to redeem themselves here tonight against a struggling Mooresville team. So we already talked about that one. 6:30 over at South Iredell. You'll have Mooresville taking on South Iredell. The other directional Iredell schools, they haven't been that good either. North Iredell at 5-7 and West Iredell at 5-9. They're not going to go to the playoffs. That is for sure. The only question is, are they going to win again before we end the season? Now, West Iredell, just to put it frankly, probably will get another win before the year ends as they take on Statesville tonight. And we talked about how long it's been since Statesville won a baseball game. And then I expect North Iredell to win at least one more as next week they also play Statesville High School. But I'd like to be surprised. I would. Statesville, if you're listening, if you know anybody over there, get yourselves a win. We're cheering for you here at WSIC. We don't like to see people go winless. So that is the baseball scene around the area. Like I said, nobody really ranking all that good right now when it comes to the national rankings. But what we do have, if I can pull up the correct thing, for some reason it's not cooperating with me, is some good high school women's soccer teams. Yeah, in this area alone, there are quite a few in the top 25. Not schools that we talk about every single day. Huff High School, 13th in the state. Pine Lake, where I went to high school, 12th in the state of North Carolina. So you have some talent in this area as far as the school records go. Pine Lake is 10-0-1, 10 wins, one tie, no losses. That one tie came to Cox Mill High School in the first game of the season. Now, Cox Mill is pretty good, but they're not great. And Pine Lake has gone on a run where you might say if they play each other right now, they might run away with that one because Pine Lake is not a school that you're going to want to mess with. That women's soccer team is good this year. We also have Lake Norman having an okay season. 7-5, 4-1 in conference, which is definitely going to save them when it comes to the playoffs. But they're a top 100 team in the state of North Carolina, ranked at 85. So we can't discount them and what they're going to do for the remainder of the year. We also, Mooresville High School, man, I mean, 9-2, 28th in the state. We talked about them a little bit. They're going on a run here. They've won a few in a row, and I expect them to be a problem when we get to the playoffs. They started the year at 2-2. Now they're 9-2. So if you do that math, they've won 7 consecutive games. That's pretty good. Getting hot at the right time. They only have a few games left in the year, just a handful, really. And then playoffs about a month, a little less than a month from now. We're going to wrap up the spring sports with playoffs, and then it'll be summer break. Oof. So, yeah, that's something to look forward to is high school playoffs. Man, it snuck up on us, didn't it? I mean, not really. We've been talking about it every day. But it feels like it just started. It feels like last week I was telling you about the basketball finals. The North Iredell women's soccer team is sitting right at 500 at 6-6. And the West Iredell girls soccer team at 3-7. Not the best years, but at 6-6 with a good amount of games left, you might be able to turn it around. And they do have some games against Statesville coming up. And we talked about them. They haven't won a game yet. Shh, don't tell anybody. And last but not least, we want to at least talk about South Iredell. Not many games this year, all in all. They didn't have a very big schedule. And they're 3-4 right now. Conference-wise, 2-3. So just below 500. I don't expect them to make too much noise. We're going to keep an eye on Mooresville, Pine Lake, and North Iredell. I think they could make a run here and get themselves into the playoffs. We got a couple of weeks left of the season. Look, we got playoffs all over the place. We got NBA playoffs, play-in games tonight, NHL playoffs start on Saturday, and that's where I want to go next. Now that we've wrapped up our high school segments for the day, I want to talk a little bit about what's going on in the NHL, because last night there were some important games when it comes to who's going to be matching up with who in the playoffs. And we talked about the New York Rangers being the team that Carolina has been chasing in the standings for the past month. They didn't get there, unfortunately, for the Hurricanes. They're going to wind up second in the Metro. They're still going to get a home game in game one of the playoffs, but they'll be taking on a really hot New York Islanders club. And in hockey, I don't want to match up against the team that's playing their best hockey going into the playoffs, because yeah, it's a 7-game series, but anything can happen in those 7 games. So the New York Rangers won their game last night, giving them the clinching win they need to claim the Metropolitan Division. Also, the Rangers win puts them as the President's Trophy winners this year. So the best record in the NHL, the most team points, I should say, in the NHL. If Carolina wins, they're going to get second in the NHL. Not a terrible season at all. Nothing to hang your head on, but 52 wins, 22 losses, seven extra losses in overtime. That's not a bad season. Now it's about to count. They're 8-2 in their last 10. They've won 5 consecutive. They are also a hot team going into the playoffs. Now, there's other teams a little bit farther below them in the standings that are really starting to make some noise. Pittsburgh Penguins, I would be scared of them. Pittsburgh plays tonight, their final game of the year. And here's how the standings are ranking out right now. This is insane. If the season were to end today, the Islanders, who have already clinched, would be the 3 seed. We already know they're going to play the Hurricanes. That is not changing. Wild card number 1, the same as it's been for the past few weeks, would be Tampa Bay, the Lightning. Wild card number 2, that's where things are starting to shuffle, would be the Washington Capitals. Behind them, and tied with them in points, by the way, the Detroit Red Wings. 1 point behind those two teams, the Pittsburgh Penguins. 1 more point behind is the Flyers. All of those teams, those 4 teams in 1 game remaining, all 4 of them have a chance to make the playoffs. Now for Washington, it's easy. If they win their game and get 2 points, it's over. They win. They're moving to the playoffs. Detroit needs a win and they need help. Pittsburgh needs a win and they need help. And Philly is really the team that's throwing a monkey wrench into this entire thing. Detroit plays Montreal, which honestly, it should be a win for them. Tomorrow, The Islanders are playing the Penguins for the final game of the season. And also tonight is probably the most important game because, like I said, if Washington wins their game, their final game of the season, they're in no matter what happens behind them. The thing is, they're playing a team that needs to win in regulation. Because if Philadelphia wins, but it's in overtime, Washington gets a point and Philadelphia wins it, they would be 1 point behind Washington, giving eliminating them from the playoffs. So there's a really interesting thing that I'm thinking, if we're going to watch this game tonight together as a family, you know, as a WSIC family, this is the one to watch. Philadelphia and Washington. We could see something unprecedented. If this game is tied late in regulation, Philadelphia is probably going to pull their goaltender and go try to get the win because a tie does them no good. It eliminates them from the playoffs. This is going to be a playoff atmosphere in this game. And it starts now. Who's going to get in? I don't know. If Washington wins, well, everything else is kind of whatever. When we come back, we're going to get into the NBA. We're going to also finish up the NHL because I want to talk about the West. So don't go anywhere. We're back after this.
Keep it right here. We'll have more of The Scoreboard with Joe Berg in just a moment. From 105.9, 100.7 WSIC. Talk sports with Joe Berg. Call 844-STUDIO-4. It's The Scoreboard on 105.9, 100.7 WSIC.
All right, everyone, welcome back. We are halfway through on this Tuesday. Whew, man, what a day. I could not be more excited for the NHL playoffs this year. Now, the NBA is a different story. I don't know. Something's got to change there. That play-in tournament really just rubs me the wrong way. I understood it during the COVID season when we didn't get an entire year in, but keeping it around because you want more playoff teams, you know, only 10 teams in the NBA don't make the playoffs. It's only a third of the league doesn't make the playoffs. That's pretty bad. That is pretty bad. 844-STUDIO-4, that's 844-788-3464. If you want to get in, part of the show, be on the program. We'll chat, talk about anything that you like, anything you know of going on in the area, anyone you want to call in and shout out. We'll definitely take that call here on The Scoreboard. I wanted to just quickly go over the Western Conference in the NHL. We didn't talk about it at all, because we're not going to have to worry about it for the Carolina Hurricanes unless, obviously, they get to the Stanley Cup Final. Then they got to play the representative from the West. So, whatever. We'll see what happens when we get there. But here's how things are shaking down. The Vancouver Canucks and Edmonton Oilers still have to settle who the winner of the Pacific Division is going to be. It seems like the Canucks, as they have a 3-point lead right now with only two games remaining, but it's Canucks, Oilers, and then the LA Kings in that Pacific division. In the West, you have the Dallas Stars at 111 points, who are tied with the Carolina Hurricanes for the second best in the NHL, I should say. Then it's the Winnipeg Jets and the Colorado Avalanche. Those teams still have to settle who will have home ice in the playoffs. Remember, when we're looking at these divisions, 2 and 3 play each other, and then 1 plays the wild card teams. It's weird. It is. Don't get me wrong. It's very weird. So those wild card teams in the West are the Nashville Predators and the Las Vegas Golden Knights. The Predators are actually the first team in the NHL to finish their season, along with the New York Rangers. As last night, those two teams ended their season, and for the Predators, at least, they unfortunately ended it on a loss, whereas the Rangers ended it on a shutout victory, which is you know, even though it's against a bottom feeder team, that's pretty good. Carolina's going to look to end their season really well tonight with another win, get that momentum continuing into the playoffs. So we'll continue to monitor what's going on in the NHL, but we're kind of in a holding pattern right now. We know who the Hurricanes are going to face. We just got to wait for Saturday and let everybody else duke it out and figure out who's part of the dance. And if you're in it, you can win it. Let's move on to the NBA. Actually, basketball, first of all. The WNBA draft was last night. Obviously, Caitlin Clark with the number one pick. I saw something on social media that said there was a bet placed on one of these online sports books that Caitlin Clark would not be the number one overall pick. And the odds are great. It was like plus 2,000 or something like that. But why are you wasting your money on a bet that you know is not going to hit? There's a 0% chance that Caitlin Clark was not going to be the number one pick. So Caitlin Clark goes to the Indiana Fever. Cameron Brink, the second pick. Camilla Cardozo out of South Carolina, number three. And teammates now with Angel Reese as she was picked seventh. Both of those players getting picked by the same team there. So we'll see what goes on with the season. I am more interested than anything in the ratings. I really don't want to get into the weeds too much on what I think the season's going to be like in the WNBA, because number one, we're still about a month or so away from that beginning. And number two, well, I'm not very familiar with the WNBA. What I do know, though, is that Caitlin Clark going to the Indiana Fever. The Fever had the WNBA Rookie of the Year last year, and I had it up, and I seem to have lost it, so I apologize for that. But joining a team that's already young with some good talent, the Fever are going to make some noise, and I do expect them to make the playoffs. Maybe not win it all, but you know, you got Caitlin Clark, you got a difference maker now, so this is going to be a fun WNBA season. How many times have you heard that on the radio? Probably not many. And like I said, Angel Reese, who LSU played Iowa in the championship last year, and they had their, I guess, rivalry-ish. I don't want to call it a rivalry because they said they're friends. But that's when social media went crazy because those two kept going at each other during the championship game. And like, all right, that's healthy competition in my eyes. All's fair. All is fair. All right, now we look at the NBA and the play-in tournament. Here is the schedule for today. 7:30, you're going to get the Lakers and the Pelicans. The winner of that game will be the 7 seed in the NBA playoffs. Then at 10 o'clock, the Sacramento Kings will take on the Golden State Warriors. The implications of that game are the loser is eliminated. The winner does not move on. On Friday, after all this nonsense, we'll have the winner of the 10 o'clock game, Golden State and Sacramento, play the loser of the Lakers and the Pelicans to see who gets to be the 8th seed in the NBA playoffs this year. This is kind of a mess. It is. And it's easy to follow, but like when I say it out loud and talk about it, it's like, man, what are we doing? We just played a whole 82 game season. And you're telling me that that couple of these teams, their season is coming down to one game, one elimination game? I don't know how I feel about that. Football is different. You know, football, the whole season is, every game is so important because there's so few of them. So, you know, it makes sense, but there's 82 NBA games. And you're telling, it's kind of like baseball and the wild card. You play 162 games to lose in the wild card game, and that's your season? Neither of those feel right to me, to be honest with you. But that's the situation we have. And then tomorrow, by the way, the Heat and 76ers and the Hawks and the Bulls will be playing each other. So game number one of the play-in tournament at 7:30, that'll be the Lakers and the Pelicans. Obviously, I expect the Lakers to win, but like I talked about yesterday, if the Lakers win, they got to go play the Denver Nuggets, who they have lost to in their last 9 games. Eventually, it's got to turn around, but you got to ask yourself, is today the day where it turns around? I don't know. I don't know if this is the year for the Lakers, if they're going to have to go through Denver. I don't know if this is the year for the Lakers, period. I think the champion may be coming out of that Eastern Conference, but I'm not going to make my picks. Like I said, not until we have a little bit more of an understanding of who's going to be playing who. Because as much as I say there's no parity in the NBA, there very well could be an upset. You never know. That's why we play the games. You never know if a one seed is going to come out flat for 3 games and fall in a hole and not be able to recover. That's why we play the games. All right, one more segment on the other side of the break. We're going to talk about NASCAR and a little bit of MLB, as there are so many injuries with pitchers. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to The Scoreboard. We're back after this.
More of sports director Joe Berg's The Scoreboard is coming up on 105.9 100.7 WSIC. The Scoreboard with Joe Berg continues now on 105.9 100.7 WSIC.
Welcome back to the final segment here on this wonderful Tuesday. 844 Studio 4 is the phone number. Be a part of the program, anything you want to chat about, I'm here for you. We're going to get into the MLB. And I've been waiting a little bit to talk about this one. There is a growing rift between the MLB and the MLBPA. And I think this could cause problems. I do. Maybe not in the immediate future, but when the CBA is up, we don't have a good history with baseball and them being able to not fall into a lockout. I am a little bit concerned because MLB insiders are pretty worried by the rise in arm injuries to top young starting pitchers. Here's the report of the 166 Major League Baseball players who began the season on the injured list. 132 of those were pitchers. I'm going to say that one more time. Out of the 166 Major League Baseball players to start the season on the injured list, only 34 of them were not pitchers. That's it. Everybody else is a pitcher. And the growing arm problems concern. Now, we know what the thought process is. The MLBPA believes that the shortening of the pitch clock has contributed to these injuries. MLB obviously countered that with a study that said, no, this is not true. The pitch clock is not what's causing this. Here are some of the players who have had a surgery of any kind over the past couple of years since we started the pitch clock. Clayton Kershaw, Max Scherzer, Jacob deGrom, Justin Verlander, those all experiencing problems. Sandy Alcantara, Shane McClanahan, Brandon Woodruff, and Kyle Wright, all of those players, surgery. Alcantara was the unanimous Cy Young of the NL in 2022. Shane McClanahan was a starter for the All-Star game. And, man, Brandon Woodruff missed the season with shoulder surgery. This is a problem. And it is. And it's going to become more of a problem. Whether or not the pitch clock is the cause of this, I don't know. I'm not that smart. I'm going to have to defer to the scientists who are doing the studies and trying to, and I don't know how they do those studies. That's a conversation again for another day of like, how are they doing these? Do they just walk up to the guy and say, hey, how's your shoulder feeling today? How many pitches have you thrown this week? You know, my favorite thing about the MLB when it comes to pitch count, why do we only count the pitchers when the pitcher is playing the game, when the ball is live? Why do warmups not count? Why does long toss in between days not count on pitch count? You're still throwing the ball, so I don't get it. I don't know what the way to protect arms is. Obviously not what we've been doing because all of these great pitchers are having surgery. And this problem is going to grow as the year continues. We are going to see a lot of injuries coming in the middle of the season. I have a feeling. And I don't think that it is solely because of the pitch clock, but I do believe that that is one of the main reasons. You know, the way the players train is one thing, too. They are full speed 100% of the time. They're trying to get as much velocity and as much spin rate on the ball as they can. And obviously, that's going to cause problems when you put that much torque through your arm. And the season is not very old. And this is already becoming a problem. Like I said, only 34 players who started the season on the injured list were not pitchers. I don't see how the MLB doesn't throw up the red flag there and say, hey, maybe we should get to the bottom of this and figure out why these guys' arms are breaking down. And it sounds like they are. They're trying to figure it out because nobody wants injured pitchers, especially the greater pitchers. I mean, we don't get to watch Shohei Ohtani this year throw a baseball. We just get to watch him hit, which is still great. I mean, he's a phenomenal hitter. But it does feel like we're getting robbed of a year of prime Shohei Ohtani. All because of what? What is causing these pitchers' arms to be destroyed? I don't know. I was always told from like a young age, don't start throwing curveballs until you're a certain age because you're going to destroy your arm. Now you watch the Little League World Series and these kids are throwing sliders and curveballs and screwballs. And it's like, geez, why are you doing this? Now, maybe that has something to do with it. But like I said, I am not the expert. I am just the one watching the games and talking about what I think is happening. And I don't know what's happening on this, but what I do know is it's going to be a problem. And I'm telling you, when we get time to negotiate that next CBA in the MLB, they're going to be looking to get rid of that pitch clock or at least significantly reduce it. Look, short games are one thing, but I don't mind if the game's going to be 3.5 hours and be incredibly entertaining. So you kind of got to figure out which way you want to go with this baseball. And I would say shorten it. Part of the point of going to a baseball game is to just be there. Be at the stadium. Why are you rushing people out? Because of TV ratings. Because nobody wants to sit in front of their TV and watch a baseball game for 3 hours. They're okay with watching NFL football for 3.5 hours, which on average is the longest game of all four major sports in the U.S. Soccer, the shortest, easy. Hockey is down there. Baseball, now it's down there. It used to be up there with the NFL. And I know there was a problem. Games were getting longer and longer. Scoring was down. Well, they got rid of the shift, and now batting average is going up again, and so is runs. We're going to talk a little bit of NASCAR tomorrow. We'll push that off because I do want to make sure that you guys understand why this is a problem for the MLB right now. They're major pitchers. They're number one guys, people who they are marketing as not only the future of the sport, but the current and the old of the sport. Max Scherzer is over 35 years old. Justin Verlander, over 35 years old. He's really old. So it's not only them, it's your young guys too. Like I said, Sandy Alcantara, he is not an old player. 28 years old. I'd consider that to be pretty young. Kyle Wright for the Royals, 28 years old. Baseball-wise, you're in the prime of your career. Shane McClanahan, 26 years old. Brandon Woodruff, 31. Prime. Maybe Woodruff's a little bit past it, but you see what I'm saying. This is a problem for baseball. I don't know how they fix it. What's the difference between today's starting pitcher and starting pitchers from, I don't know, the 40s, who would routinely throw 9-inning games? Well, a starting pitcher, I was listening to a podcast about baseball, and even at the turn of the century, in 2000, starting pitchers were throwing like 89, 91. It was rare where you had somebody throwing 97, 98, even triple digits for a starting pitcher. Now, everybody's throwing that hard, at least 95. Maybe that has something to do with it. Maybe they're throwing too hard. Maybe they're trying to get too much torque into their arm and get too much spin rate so the ball moves more. There's a lot that goes into pitching. And right now, it's the biggest problem the MLB faces. How they handle it, it could determine the next decades of baseball. So we'll continue to monitor the injuries in the MLB. It's a problem, and it's going to continue to be a problem until they do something about it. All right, let's get into this day in sports history, as we only have a few minutes left. On this day, 1940, Cleveland Indians pitcher Bob Feller threw the first and only Major League Baseball opening day no-hitter, beating the White Sox of Chicago 1-0 at Comiskey Park. Now, there was another opening day no-hitter, but it was not in the MLB. It was future Hall of Famer. Where was it here? I missed it. I had it and I lost it. Leon Day. Leon Day of the Philadelphia Stars. That was the Negro National League, which is now becoming part of MLB's official stats. So soon we can say there have been two opening day no-hitters. But as of right now, officially, there's only been one. Thanks, everyone, for joining today. I appreciate everyone for listening to The Scoreboard. I'll be here yet again tomorrow. Oh, boy, we're probably going to have a lot of basketball to talk about. Tune into all that. Support the local high schools. And I'll talk to you guys tomorrow. Until then, have a nice night, everyone.
Serving you better than ever before. 105.9 100.7 WSIC, Statesville, Mooresville, North Charlotte.